Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived the disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. Good evening, Earth Explorers. Brooks Agnew here, your host, coming to you live from Eastern Washington State. Our AccuWindow forecast is it's about 28 degrees and clear outside. The solar wind tonight is a moderate 588 kilometers a second, but the sun is completely blank again, except for a little sunspot 975, just barely popped into existence. There's a mild coronal hole facing us right now, so if you witness an aurora borealis, it might be a rare thing. Have we hastened the demise of the universe by looking at it? That's the startling question posed by a pair of physicists who suggest that we may have accidentally nudged the universe closer to its death by observing dark energy, which is thought to be speeding up cosmic expansion. Lawrence Krauss of Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, and colleague James Dent suggest that by making this observation in 1998, we may have caused the universe to revert to a state similar to its early history, when it was more likely to end. Incredible as it seems, our detection of the dark energy may have reduced the life expectancy of the universe, says Krauss. Also, a little bit of news on China's lunar orbiter. It's set to begin switching on its science instruments. The spacecraft should help determine the thickness of the lunar soil and shed new light on the moon's internal composition, which could help in understanding its origins. The China National Space Administration launched the Chang'e 1 spacecraft on 24 October and it settled into orbit around the moon on the 7th of November. Shangye 1 is named after the goddess who flew to the moon in a Chinese legend. Like the other missions, Shangye 1 has spectrometers to map the chemical composition of the moon's surface, a laser altimeter to map the moon's topography, and a camera to photograph the surface. However, it does have one unique instrument, a radiometer, that operates at microwave frequencies. The microwave radiometer will measure heat radiation coming from the moon. This will allow it to map the depth of the lunar soil across the moon's surface because the layer's thickness affects the flow of heat. It might reveal something else about the moon as well. Well, if you were with us last week, you were with us with James Gilliland for the first 2 hours and Bob Hieronymus the last hour. James is the caretaker of the hottest UFO activity location in the U.S., and Bob is the author of a new book called Founding Fathers, Secret Societies. He covered how the Founding Fathers were involved with the Freemasons, the Illuminati, and the Rosicrucians. They were both great guests, so please go back and listen to those archives. My guest this week is the author of an awesome book called Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. He is a clinical hypnotherapist and dedicated to foreseeing how emerging crisis in climate, culture, and consciousness can help provide creative solutions to them. He is a clinical mental health counselor with the U.S. Department of Defense. So please welcome with me Dr. John J. Harper. How are you, John?
I'm fine, sir. Good evening.
Well, I can tell you, it's such a pleasure to read your book and to have you on the program. Transformers is a smooth read, and like you, I guess you laid it out after a long period of research. When did you start your research for this book?
Well, you know, Bruce, for me, I was a standard electronics engineer and computer scientist, actually, for about 25 years with the Department of Defense, so running through the late 60s, 70s, 80s, and everything kind of began for me in terms of the metaphysical connections with physics and science was the summer of 1988, six months prior to this metaphysical event that I speak about in the opening of my book. I had a friend of mine, a colleague who was a physicist, and he died suddenly one Monday morning on the way to work, basically, in Huntsville, Alabama. His name was George Begay, and George and I were good friends in the military in Europe, and then went on to attend the University of Alabama together. But George died of a massive heart attack in November 1987, and I was a pallbearer at that very elaborate Catholic funeral, so it really stuck with me, of course. And then 6 months after, I had just really went into a period of deep grief, and I told my wife that, you know, I want to go back to the Seattle, Washington area where I was born and raised. And so I transferred with the Department of Defense from Huntsville, Alabama to Keyport, Washington, the Naval Undersea Warfare Center there. And but one morning in June 1988, so I'm flash forwarding here 6 months after his death, he stood before me, and it changed my life forever. And that's that was the beginning of the odyssey since that time.
Now, were you asleep or were you awake when that happened? Did he just step out from behind a veil or something and talk to you?
What happened was totally beyond my ability at the time, I believe, to even put together a subconscious scenario for this to happen, let alone a conscious one. I awoke in what I thought was a lucid dream state, and I've had a few of those in my life, so I have some experience with that, but the difference was that this just did not disappear. As I came from the dream state, that trance-like state, it became clearer, more vibrant. The image of my friend became more holographic. I was not even familiar with that term at the time. And I really had this beyond my comprehension experience. So, I mean, you know, folks say, you know, was it a hallucination? Was it this, that, the other? All I know is that when I've never had an experience like that. I've never had one prior to that was anywhere near it, and so it is beyond description, beyond the words. I can't explain it exactly because it was an experience. It was a deep, highly energetic visual image dancing in front of me in some manner. It was dancing. It was shimmering, you know. It was not solid. It was a holographic projection.
Now, your relationship with George, this was while you were in electronics and in computers, and did you talk about these deeper subjects? Was this like near-death experiences? Was this something you guys were interested in, and he decided to come back and say, hey, I really found something here you need to know about?
You know, I've had over two decades now, thereabouts, to reflect on this. And as I wrote in the book, and it did take me many years of research to put the pieces together, at least to my satisfaction, but George was a real scientist. He was an introvert physicist, and in fact, his graduate degree was in optics, and I didn't even remember that initially. I just said, you know, just one bright little penny. I mean, George was just a super mathematician that came intuitive to him. He was certainly one of the brightest guys in our military unit. We both worked electronics and missiles and high technology back in the 60s. And we were part of an elite group that actually was handpicked to go to school in Huntsville, Alabama, and then go to Europe and set up the first missile site. So I always say I was the dumbest among the brightest because I was the youngest for one thing. And we had folks that were working on their PhDs at that time that were drafted from all the top Ivy League schools and all the major, research centers in the country. And I was really just this kid from Seattle that got mixed up in some very high-tech stuff because I just happened to do well on an examination, you know. And so the point is that George was the kind of guy that he wouldn't really share his feelings that deeply with anyone except me. For some reason, we bonded, and we really hit it off from an early age. Then we got married, and our wives were friends, and we had a couple daughters each, a couple girls, and they, you know. So it was really, it became kind of a family thing, you know, where we get together and talk. And what really struck me on hindsight was, you know, we'd sit around and play chess. And, of course, I didn't have a chance with this guy, but I like to sit there and drink beer and mumble, you know, intelligent kind of sounding stuff about chess. And then while he was checkmating me. And later I reflected on these things, and I realized that as we would talk, we were talking about philosophical things that later would come back to me and confirm that the experience I had with my friend after his death did kind of lead up to kind of a grand metaphysical encounter, you know, of the fifth kind, I say the fifth dimension, the inner space. And so, you know, real quickly, that's kind of where I was at. I was dumbfounded by this, actually.
Wow. Well, that gives me a good segue because you wrote a poem in your book called The Cosmic Human Butterfly, and with your permission, I'd like to read it.
Thank you.
I also want to let you all know, the people that are out there getting ready to call in, we're going to open the call-in lines in the second hour. Let's give John a chance his first hour to really get rolling. However, if you want to send us questions, you can do that, of course, with the AOL Instant Messenger with my handle, which is Vision Officer, or you can use the Pal Talk at our network, bbsradio.com. And I would especially like to welcome the Steel Eye Radio Network, because we are now simultaneously broadcasting on two networks around the globe. So we may have made the jump from the fastest-growing talk radio program Sunday nights in North America to the biggest. We'll see when the numbers come in. Anyway, here is the Cosmic Human Butterfly. Birth after birth, I walk the earth. Always my goal is the same. Yearning for learning, looking, unhooking, attempting to master the game. Walking and talking, at times even stalking the truth that I know is here. Then struggling to dance, ever flirting with chance, knowing much on life's path is a dare. Again, I come to the ridge that has no bridge to the place God's calling me to be. Yet my body still falters at nature's altar, though indeed the Christ set us free. Yes, I've been here before on this very shore, trying to manifest the freedom espied. But now there's peace, soul powers released. So I don't take that last step. I fly. I found that was very touching in the beginning of your book, and I know from that, even though it's compressed language, that it has taken you years to come to this work. So I wanted to ask you if you had a clear question for which you sought an answer, or did the files of this research just sort of, you know, take a life of their own after the as the years piled up?
Well, initially, Bruce, what I was challenged with is how could somebody with a rational background in the hard sciences like myself, very left brain oriented at the time, extremely intense, type A research scientist, holding a top secret military clearance at that time, working on some very cutting edge technological programs and working with some, like I say, very bright puppies. I really was stunned that I could personally have this depth of experience in the metaphysical or spiritual realm. I've always been open-minded, but I would hope that no one thought I had a gaping hole in it. So I was challenged with that initially, and so once I started looking at the physics, I didn't even go into the religious side, although I had a pretty good background in philosophy and religion. I've always been someone seeking the ultimate questions and answer phases, you know, to life. You know, why are we here? What's the meaning? You know, et cetera. And, but I wasn't really into that initially. I wanted to know how I could see multidimensionally with these eyes that are, you know, on each side of my Scottish nose. Why could I suddenly shift in consciousness from a dream state to a lucid state of consciousness and then a fully awake state and yet still see an image that was in this other dimensional realm? And I realized that something had shifted within my brain. How I know that, I don't have words necessarily, but I can tell you that is the classic third eye opening of the pineal pituitary gland. Later I put it together with dimethyltryptamine, DMT, which is manufactured, you know, endogenously by the body. Endogenous means within the body, and basically the brain is this huge pharmaceutical factory that we only tap a very fraction of. And so I realized that I had to reconcile the physics and the metaphysics. I realized that people that probably had mystical encounters like this had a physiological correlate. And so that's where I began my research.
What do you think opened your eye? I mean, what event? Was there a piece of music? Was there a piece of art? Was there some kind of icon that you saw, or was it this lucid dream that just opened it up, or did it open up right before you had this dream?
I believe it was what I would call shock. I mean, I think it was traumatic stress from both the day-to-day grind that I found myself in at work, and also the grief, probably working on out subconsciously, trying to reconcile my friend's death and then trying to ask the big questions, you know, did he survive the experience? If so, where would he be? What, you know, what space might he be in? What, is there heaven? Is there hell? Is there realms in between, et cetera? I've had, as I shared in my book, some experiences with this from childhood on. But you know what, Brooks, I think the thing that blows my mind the most is I was not able to put the pieces of the cosmic puzzle together faster than I did. I mean, I really labored with all of these ideas, and I really, you know, fine sliced them, and I just would tease out every little piece. And that's why it took me maybe 15 years or so before I published the first version of my book. And so, you know, it came from a labor of love, but a labor of great pain and suffering on my part.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and maybe even to a point we look back and even love the suffering, because it allowed us to open doors that we may not have opened before. We may have passed
by. Well, you know, I've got a saying for that. The Greeks said it real succinctly. They said, what doesn't kill me strengthens me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I know you were very active during those years, and you were also researching and interviewing as often as time allowed. But and you were interviewing, I guess, people that had near-death experiences. Did you reach a time where you thought you had a clear answer to your question, or did you go down a few blind alleys, or, you know, when did it click and then you said, okay, I'm ready to title and write this book?
Well, you know, I did not set out to write a book, and I did not set out to talk on worldwide radio, let alone local and national radio. I'm the kind of guy that, I just enjoy being with people and myself in small circles and social gatherings. I have no desire, as a rule, to get up and beat a pulpit or convert anyone to anything. So that's the strangest part of maybe what I'm doing today here in this part of my life, is I do feel strongly that this needs to get out more, and I'm kind of passionate about this information, but I don't own it by any means. It's a cosmic phenomenon. It's a great mystery. It's still a mystery to me, but I think it's real. I think the reality just has to be expanded to include all these metaphysical experiences. I guess I'd put it that way. But, to even answer your question a little more in depth, briefly, I started just jotting down notes. I started reading books, and the classic synchronicity started happening. And once those started happening in force, I just broke out and realized I was part of the cosmic giggle. And so I said, okay, we're going to ride this horse till it drops, or, it takes us across the finish line. And so that's what happened. I just beat this horse, this research animal, to death, basically. But it did come across the finish line for me, I think. So I'm at peace, I guess.
Well, I know you met some interesting people. You met my friend Danny and Brinkley. How did that go in that interview? If you want to talk about near-death experiences, this is the guy who's got them duplicate. So
I've met several good folks like that. Danny and Brinkley certainly being one, and Mellon Thomas Benedict, who I hope millions of folks can get to listen to his story. But, I was invited in Spokane to be his his escort when he would come a couple times here to speak to large groups in the Spokane, Washington area. So anyway, Daniel and I would sit in the blue room, as we say, and sit in the back, and those are some very interesting chats where he'd basically read my mind, and then I'd start stuttering, because of it. But I had some pretty interesting encounters with him. But anyway, the thing of it is that it starts becoming whole cloth. I mean, you start seeing the pieces of the puzzle for yourself, and you start realizing that we're all in a dance. We all have parts of the puzzle. We're all trying to bring it together into this huge cosmic collage, and it's beautiful. I mean, there's the payoff, I guess. If we summed up the first part of this hour, I guess the payoff is that if you keep churning and burning and learning, you'll eventually get to this point where you get the aha moment, the creative insight, and then it's worth it all. So that's why the pain and suffering, as you were alluding to yourself, that's the real pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It's that feeling of, okay, everything's all right, we're all in it together, and things are going to work themselves out.
And maybe that's kind of an opening message of hope for those of you that are out there that may be in a situation of despair at the moment, or have passed through one, or getting ready to go through one. It's all part of the experience, and if you can just detach yourself just a little bit, put yourself out in the future past that event and say, that was really a tough time and I learned a lot during it, but I survived and I'm stronger and I have better perspective or more patience or more long-suffering or more insight into someone else because of it. Don't despair because you're in poverty or in poor health or something. You'll get through it, and that's a good experience for you. Spoken like a grandfather, sorry.
Not a problem. I'm a grandfather of eight, so I can relate.
Well, your book, Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century, begins with a rather lengthy preface that was a good read in and of itself. You mentioned that we were made from appearing and disappearing light that came from the inhalation and exhalation of God's breath. What did you mean when you wrote that?
Well, I probably meant the same thing that Sir Isaac Newton meant when he said, quote, "The changing of bodies into light and light into bodies is very comfortable to the course of nature, which seems delighted with transmutations," unquote. And those of us who studied Sir Isaac Newton remember he lived from 1642 to 1727. And so this is old, old stuff, folks. I mean, give me that old-time religion. Well, this is old-time science. It's good enough for Newton. It's good enough for me.
Oh, yeah.
And,
someone asked me a very basic question not long ago that set me to thinking. He asked me, what is electricity? Well, I mean, I had my book answer, but in reality, we don't really understand what it is.
We don't have a clue. And I believe
it works, yeah.
Yeah, we don't know what that stuff is that we work with in the laboratory. And I sat many years in calibration laboratories looking at everything from just, you know, standard AC-DC, low voltage, low current circuits to wave guides and microwave and gigahertz frequencies, et cetera, you know, that we're using in the nuclear submarine community, for example. And I can tell you, we don't have a clue. We know how to manipulate it, control it, channel it, create it, but we don't know, you know, anything else. We don't really know the source.
Yeah. I think we might have a little common background. I was in PMEL in the Air Force. I took
very good.
At Lowry Air Force Base. So
absolutely. That's the home of the Cal School. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, the interesting thing is when we looked at electrons and we were looking at hydrogen clouds under an electron microscope, almost frozen down as close to absolute zero as we could get it, and the electrons seem to blink into existence in a nice predictable Heisenberg probability, but then they blink out of existence again. And the questions we used to ask is that the same electron that left, or is that a different electron that came into this existence and went out into another one? Is this the inhalation and exhalation Newton was talking about?
Yes, I even have I believe it is, and I think that, you know, today we look at the idea of the universe being a torus or a donut or a bagel with a hole in the center of it, and in my mind's eye, what I see is this bagel, you know, with those electron bands of energy interacting with other electron bands and the slice of the donut or the bagel, but in the center point, I think that's the home of the zero-point energy field, which is at absolute 0 degrees. But the point is, there is no absolute 0 degrees, and there's no absolute particles. It's a cosmic dance of energy forming and transforming into whatever our mind's eye wants to see, the observer.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we're faced with this never-ending, irreconcilable dichotomy in physics, and that's when we observe energy as a wave, it's a wave, and when we observe it as a particle, it's a particle. In fact, when we try to nail down a wave, it begins acting like a particle. So how is this linked to this dual brain model that you talk about in your work?
Well, what I've come to feel comfortable with in saying at this point is that I believe that all the great scientists come to one conclusion, at least in the last few hundred years. I believe all the great mystics in the last thousands of years have come to the same conclusion. That is, it's all a mystery. However, it is consciousness in and of itself that we are discussing here, and that we will never, ever figure this out. Only we can experience it and get better at using the energy to manifest a new reality. In other words, I do believe together we will co-create a new future, a phenomenal new future that will use zero-point energy, not only in the technology, but through us. I think the body, as my friend Mellon Thomas Benedict saw through his near-death experience, comes from a never-ending cycle of energy that always has been and always will be.
This energy, at least with reference to the planet upon which we live, there's kind of a frequency to it. I found a very neat reference in your book to the Schumann resonance cave frequency, or cavity frequency, which apparently is the pulsation of Mother Earth.
Yes.
So how is this a key piece of your work and who we are here and now?
Well, this is the, you might say, the mother lodestone of my work, because the title of the book is Transformers, which is T-R-A-N-C-E, formers, and I did that because I realized that the state of consciousness that we would say in the laboratory is the theta brainwave also is resonant with the Schumann resonance cavity frequency, which is the frequency between the heartbeat at the center of the Earth and the upper atmosphere of the magnetosphere. And I have come to conclude, in fact, Brooks, that what's going on when we talk about heaven and we talk about Earth, we're talking about layers of energy, the Earth being, you might say, the particle aspect of this, heaven being the wave aspect, and it's in the Van Allen radiation belts that we're talking about are our levels of heavens. We talk about third heaven, seventh heaven in the scriptures, etc. But I believe that when I saw my friend, what I was doing was becoming resonant and therefore vibrating at that same frequency of my friend, which was in the upper atmosphere of the Van Allen radiation belt frequency, the magnetosphere, and my third eye, which was now open to the theta brainwave frequency. So we got a phase match, if you will, for just a brief minute or so there during that experience. And I know now that was the trance state.
Wow. I get a vision of that, sort of like the rods and cones, which are specialized cells in the back of our eyes, that respond only to certain wavelengths of light. But there are other parts of the human let's call it the human biology, that respond to other frequencies. And this resonance, this alignment of that energy with those senses is, I think, what happens when we have these visions, when, you know, we don't see it with our regular eyes, but we see it with another eye, and it's just as real.
Yes, it's just at a higher frequency, and so the mind's eye, the imagination, if you will, the imaginal realm, as others have described it, the heavens, as some say, these are all real. These are real realms. They're bands of energy that run the full rainbow spectrum from, you know, as you had opened the show with a quote on dark energy experimentation, all the way to ultraviolet and beyond, radiation, the cosmic rays, etc. But I believe we're talking about energy that is immortal. And any physicist, you know, we're taught basically you cannot create nor destroy energy, only transform it, although they mean the T-R-A-N-S form of that word. Mm-hmm. But I believe transforming it with the mind's eye is what we're talking about now in the future. I believe that we will literally be able to visualize in front of us objects that we want to manifest, and with an intense level of consciousness that's able to handle that level of energy, we'll be able to manifest it in front of us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're going to cover that a lot more in our second hour. You mentioned in your book a reference to star groups, and the fact that you began to understand the universe because it was divided into zodiac groups. Do you think there's some kind of soul split that aligns us with these star groups?
Well, I would say this, put it in this manner, that if we go back to the idea of the universe being a hologram in the shape of a bagel or donut, and mm-hmm. we've got these bands of energy circling at every level, so as above, so below, as within, so without, the old Greek axiom, the Egyptian axiom, that basically think of an hourglass. One could think of the cross section of a bagel or donut would be an hourglass shape. So mm-hmm. what are we talking about here? If we have the center of something, it's in an hourglass, and we have time and energy and matter flowing through, say, the top of this hourglass through us, or the earth, or the sun, at every level, as above, so below. Then at the bottom level, we have this energy dropping out, just like the north and south pole, you know, processing energy through the center of the earth, and then it comes to the center of the equator, flips around again into a kind of an infinity sign, and figure eight, lazy eight. And so I believe that's the correct model, and so does Stan Tennant, a mathematical physicist that I quote in my work back in the Boston area.
Yeah, that's not unlike Nassim Haramein, who I've met in person. I've never had a chance to interview him, but I've looked at his DVD series. And he, too, takes this mathematical look at the universe. I think there's another one, Marco Rodin, who created the Rodin toroidal coil. And they look at this energy field just like you do, like this donut, only the donut's like rolling over. The energy is flowing up and around the crown of the donut and then down through the hole and in a spiral going around. And when you look at how this universe might fit that model, you see why planets revolve on their axis, or why planets revolve around the sun, because they're naturally coaxed to by the shape of the universe.
Well, you know, one of the greatest kicks I get these days is looking at the old fairy tales and the old stories that have been handed down, and seeing these truths displayed there. For example, I'm thinking of Alice in Wonderland, and I'm thinking now of the caterpillar sitting there smoking a hookah, a water pipe, blowing smoke rings out, right, with alphabet and letters and everything forming, and he's going to Alice, "Who are you?" you know, type thing. And that gives me great joy because I'm seeing, you know, first of all, Alice falls down the rabbit hole, right? So you're talking about the center. She's going to the center of something, the center of the earth, the center of the universe, the center of her own mind. And so, again, stories like that are the Wizard of Oz, and you see the golden spiral, the, you know, the Fibonacci series, the algorithm, the Nautilus shell. And so, yeah, you just get a big cosmic giggle.
Follow the yellow brick road.
Follow the yellow brick road, and there's Oz. You can't see him. He's behind the curtain, you know.
Yeah.
And, but he's got all the answers, so, et cetera.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's see if we can line this up with human intention. Maybe we'll go into this now. Our listeners here at X Squared Radio know that there is, at the very least, a mistranslation in the record where it states many are called but few are chosen. Actually, it must say many are called but few choose. And you write in your book something very insightful about personal responsibility. You said, the absence of personal responsibility flips that task onto the priests in the sense that they claim the role of mediator between you and God. And my question is, couldn't we gather from at least the historical results that the seizure of personal responsibility by the church might be the grandest, boldest, and darkest larceny in the universe?
Amen. There's no doubt in my mind that once you take your eye off the ball, so to speak, and you allow someone else to peer through the looking glass for you and tell you what's out there, you're in deep, deep trouble.
Well, I think, at least my personal opinion, not to say anything to those people who hold to one tradition or another, but you sort of go to sleep because you disconnect your own personal psyche with the center, with the source, with the creator, and you hand over that responsibility to someone else. And I don't know what your feelings are, but I don't know if it's a one-size-fits-all kind of relationship. I think it's kind of personal, don't you?
I think it's very personal and intimate, and, it says in the opening scriptures of Genesis, we were created in the image of God. And I didn't find any mediator there. But now let me say something, because I was a lay minister for a while, so folks should not think for some reason I'm on an anti-religion kick. What I object to is folks trying to usurp your own personal power. And I think that if we think about the energy relationship between the Creator and ourselves, then we realize that whether it be a priest, a politician, or a physician, as I say, all three are necessary, but they need to get off the, I'm the in the middle person. They need to self-empower us, and they can do that by coming up to this level of consciousness, as Jesus did, I believe, and then say, through me. But what he's talking about is through this relationship between the energy dynamics that you are and the Creator.
Yeah, I think you're dead right on that. I don't think he stood up and said, "I am the church." I think he stood up and said, "I am the way."
Just right. Through me, you can experience God, because I'm in that state of consciousness that I'm trying to get you to come up to as well.
Sure. And that kind of brings me to my next question. What would you say, and I've heard this term loosely thrown out, as someone might throw a business card out, what is Christ consciousness?
Yeah, there's a lot of definitions that need to be reworked or even discarded and then start anew. But one of the things that happened to me, and so I'm going to share a quick personal experience. Right after my friend died, I went into this turmoil of trying to resolve this conundrum here that I mentioned in the early part of the hour. But about a year and a half, I believe it was a year and a half, about September 1990, so somewhere between the summer of 88, fall of 1990, I had a profound secondary confirmation experience. And what that was, I had come home from working as an engineer, scientist during the day with the Navy, got into my study, talked to the kids and my wife and all that, but went back into my hermit mode as research scientist, went back in the study, and maybe about 9 or 10 o'clock that evening. It was very quiet. Everyone was asleep for the evening. It was a school night for the kids. And I remember getting into a kind of an interesting state of mind, very reflective, very calm, but all of a sudden, wham, my mind opened up again into a full-blown state of, I can't remember if it was sparkling energy, but, you know, I want to paint that visual image. It was kind of like, you know, effervescence. It was just bubbly, you know, but it was a feeling of that for certain. But what really hit me was that information was flowing through me like a major pipeline, and I was in this state of mind that was phenomenal. I mean, it was not frightening, but I said to myself, oh, my God, what have I done now? Did I stroke out? I mean, what did I do to myself with the strain that I've been under? But it was a beautiful, velvety kind of feeling, and it was wonderful, and it was just love, and it was all the good things that we hear about. But I said, you know, I actually got up from my study, went into my wife, sat on the edge of the bed, and I said, Connie, wake up. And she said, what's the matter? You know, I said, I'm in a state of mind that I've never been in. She said, what are you drinking? I go, no, I'm not drinking anything. You know, what are you smoking? I'm not smoking anything, you know. But it was that kind of questioning a good wife would ask, maybe, just being humorous with me. And I said, no, Connie, I'm serious. I'm in a state of mind I've never been in. And I can tell you, if I stay in this state of mind until morning, I'll never work another day in my life. And what I meant by that was there is no way that I could carry on a rational, quote-unquote, existence with my colleagues, knowing that I could read every thought that went through their mind, know all the secrets of the universe. And because what happened to me, I started questioning in my mind's eye. I would ask a question about science, physics, religion, Jesus. I pumped as many questions into this state of mind that I could, and I got instant feedback. I don't know if it was true now, but what I did was, I do believe I tapped the Akashic records or the mind of the species, the mind of the planet. So that much I'll say today. That is true. And so, you know, there's the quick on that story. I mean, I believe there's a state of consciousness called Christ consciousness, and that, I believe, is what it will be like.
This Christ consciousness is there. By the way, that state of mind, I know intimately what you're talking about there. Similar situation happened to me and happened to another friend of mine. And this connection was called a download. It was just, I didn't ask for it. It just, the connection was made. It hooked up. And when, I would liken it to an electrical cable just hooking up to the middle of my chest. And when that information starts flowing, it's so fast that your physical mind can't grasp everything, because we're used to, you know, reading things in words, and these didn't come in words. It came in images and energy packets. It would take years to say it, but the image, the concepts came rushing into your mind. So I have a perfect empathy with that. But this Christ consciousness, do you have, as a scientist, especially with your understanding of complex energy systems, does it have some kind of structure to it? Is it linked to the Earth? Is it linked to the solar system or the heliosphere? Is there some grid or a network that we are close to right now that seems to be energizing, to which we're becoming connected? And you're not alone. I mean, there are millions of people out there.
Yes, finally, you know, but you do feel alone with this, you know, 20, 30 years ago and earlier, right? You know,
yeah.
I mean, now we've got good folks like you talking to folks like me on the network, and I think the World Wide Web is a good metaphor for what we're discussing here. Yes, of course we're linking up now. Of course more and more are going to have this experience, and thank God we're not alone anymore. The third eye is opening, and I think one of the main tenets and important ideas that I'd like to convey to our listeners this evening and morning, wherever they might be around our great globe, that this is happening, and it's going to happen more and more, and that is the opening of the third eye. There's going to be a real problem, I think, though, in some cultures because of religious indoctrination, because of certain belief systems that have blocked this type of knowledge for centuries from coming forth in society. I mean, it's in the indigenous native cultures. The shaman, again, comes to mind, the mystic, Christian mystic, and the mystic of every tradition, Islam, the Jewish Kabbalah, etc. But does this have a grid? Yes. It's a physical structure, you might say, of consciousness. Is it mathematical? Yes. Is it logical? Absolutely. Will we be able to understand it? I do believe so. Will we be able to use it? No doubt in my mind we'll be able to use it. And I think that's what we're doing now. We're finding that consciousness is at the center of this donut hole, this holographic bagel, if you will, and we're tapping that at the highest level, but at our level of Earth, we're tapping the core of the planet, the information fields that go around the north-south pole and beyond into the Van Allen radiation belts, I believe is what we're talking about. So some people have dark energy, I say, experiences. They're going to, you know, the ghosts are real. The apparitions can be real. The paranormal realms exist. It exists as embedded in the matter that is part of the Earth. I mean, you know, there's this constant turning over of molecules in everything. And so this resonates at certain levels with these chakra systems in our body. We don't get too technical here, at least I don't, but the point is, once they're all aligned, you get into Christ consciousness. You can also get into, you know, maybe what we might call the flip side of the Antichrist consciousness. But that's operating from the lower end of this energy spectrum, and that's how it works.
And I know that I want listeners of this program to be assured that we're not trying to slam organized religion here, but we also want you to be aware that the icons, the geometry, the idea that we might individually be connected with this consciousness may destabilize the structure of whatever tradition to which you might be holding. That is to say, the government of your religion might have some of its attraction for you weakened, and that will, you know, maybe cause you to walk out of their congregation, which would take away some of the revenue that they have, and therein lies the motivation. So, I think we do have a caller on the line. So, caller, can you give us your first name and where you're calling from?
This is Anne. I'm calling from Northern California.
Hello, Anne. How are you?
How are you? Are you all right?
Good.
I'm fine. Yeah, I was listening to you. Are you talking about the North Pole Expedition? Or did I get a little something else?
We're not talking about the North Pole Expedition right now. What we're talking about is John Harper's book, Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century.
Yeah, I can't find it somehow. I don't know why I can't get that. But anyway, are you all right? I haven't heard from you for a long time.
Yes, we're okay. It's a little chilly up here, but working hard, trying to get this biodiesel plant up and running and doing radio on Sunday nights.
Where are you up here?
I'm in a little tiny town called Odessa, Washington, east of
Spokane,
about 70 miles.
I've been in contact quite a bit with Diane Robbins, and you know who she is.
Sure.
The one that wrote the Tell Us book, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I've been in contact with her quite a bit. And anyway, I just wanted to hear your voice. I can't get you on the radio for some reason. I don't know why.
We're at x2-radio.com live right now.
Yeah, I've got it, but I can't get your voice through. I don't know what I'm not doing, but you know me. I'm not very well schooled in the computer. Thank you. I'll talk to you soon. Again.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, John, we have, about 3 minutes left in this hour. We'll end at about 5 minutes till for this hour, and then we'll end at about 7:48 Pacific time, this whole interview. But I wanted to, You mentioned the word resonance, and now we're getting into one of the major keys of your work. I think many of us have a vague idea what this means, a la The Secret, I guess, Rhonda Byrne's book, but you have a remarkable tie with the earth in this book. So in the next hour, I'd like to start exploring that. Like, is the earth reacting to the consciousness of the beings living on her? That's a very powerful question.
Yes, it is. And I hope to provide some guidelines as to what I feel is going on there as well. It'll be wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's going to be good for our second hour. My guest is Dr. John J. Harper. His book is Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. John, do you have a website you want to...
Yeah, if folks are interested in what we're discussing here, I've got a lot of things available on my website at johnjharper.com. That's johnjayharper.com. Some great articles that I've got there, and a lot of good information overall on my blog site. So take a look if you get a chance.
Very, very excellent. All right, my friends, we will take about a 3.5-minute break, and then we'll be back with more of John J. Harper and his book, Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. And this is X Squared Radio, a 3-hour program on Sunday evenings. We're now on the BBS Radio Network and the Steel Eye Radio Network, and we'll be back after these messages. Foundations of Religion and Science were utilized to write our first two volumes of The Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. If you have survived a disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. And they have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared.
Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts.
Brooks Agnew here with X Squared Radio. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future Earth events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here. But I can tell you that the first DVD in the 6-part series is now available for pre-purchase with a $5 discount. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today.
had a slight technical difficulty right there, but it's no problem. That can happen on global radio from time to time because we're working with telephones and internet, and sometimes technology doesn't behave itself. My guest is John J. Harper. His book is Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century, and his website is johnjharper.com. In the last hour, we were talking about Earth reacting to the consciousness of the beings living on her, and this alludes to the idea that Earth, the planet itself, may be a living thing. Can we maybe go into the physics and some of the metaphysics of that idea, John?
Yes, I'd love to do that, Brooks. You know, I've had the good pleasure of this discussion with many, many fine minds, and although a lot of this is not in print yet, there are some folks out here with the geometry pretty much worked out about the Earth grids and the ley lines and all that. I mean, this has been a very popular topic of many talk shows over the last, say, 5 or 10 years or so, but it's really maturing. And one of my good friends, who I wish I could speak more about in the first person, but he really wants to remain anonymous. He's working on patents for some of this knowledge, but I've been, you know, privileged to listen in on these conversations for over a decade now, maybe 15 years, I guess. But the quick of it is that the geometry of the Earth, you know, a lot of folks talk about octahedral geometries, eight-sided geometries. Think of a stop sign rotating or a big soccer ball, and it gets into some other geometric shapes. But the point is that the Earth is not just a round ball as we think of it, or even an egg shape as we're taught, an elliptic type egg shape. But what it really is, it's this beautiful web of molecules and matter that's being turned as in a lathe configuration around its axis. And in relationship, Brooks had mentioned earlier about the 12 constellations. Those constellations evidently are like portholes of energy that allow, think of Swiss cheese in a ball, if you will, and these holes of energy that come from the centers of galaxies in particular are radiating toward us in these 12 different dynamical relationships, and we're spinning on our axis. So the point is, it's kind of like a ball of cotton candy or this donut bagel that's constantly being blown through like a smoke ring from north to south, as well as rotating around its axis. So I guess in the quick of it, if we don't think we're standing on the most phenomenal gyroscope ever created, I give up. I mean, you know, for one thing. But I think the important point is that if we get this dynamic idea going on in our mind's eye, where we can see that we're not static, but that we're constantly generating electromagnetic energy, and I think we're getting to the point where we can see that as consciousness itself. And what we're talking about is a relationship between our mind, the mind of the Earth, and beyond, to the sun, the solar system itself, the planets, and then beyond to the center point of the galaxy. This is the idea of 2012 now coming in, and different folks talking about whether it's Earth changes, it's all going to be mind changes, in my opinion. We're all going to see that our consciousness impacts matter at the local level and beyond, and then we, you know, in turn, are being impacted by the shifts of energy and the geometry that we're in around 2012 in particular.
Well, that raises some interesting questions. In fact, last night I was watching Larry King, and they had Shirley MacLaine on there and some other guests, and they had a debunker, I guess you could call him, and he said, well, there's no proof in spirits, you know, the afterlife or any kind of alternate dimensions. And I thought he sort of broad-stroked a lot of very critical thinking that's out there, and I don't think that they were the best guests to elaborate on that. But my question for you is, since you have talked about these portals and these openings, these alignments with these zodiacal energies, is there a connection between the Earth itself and these zodiacal energies that are out there?
Yes, I mean, I think that these 12 signs of the zodiac have a definite meaning in terms of energetic relationships. I'm not one to believe that we can map it in the form of a horoscope necessarily. I mean, there's definitely some truth, but I think it's the up to the individual who might be very intuitive to pull out those energetic relationships. So I've been in the presence of people who are obviously psychic, for example, and obviously knew my birth sign, et cetera, and there's no sleight of hand here, but there was a definite, you might say, energetic understanding of who I am by being in my presence and me in turn with this person. So there's definitely something of that level going on with birth signs and the horoscopes and the zodiacal energies, as we might call them. But I think the important thing is that, you know, we still, I think, are kind of masters of our fate or our ill fate, so to speak. I think, you know, just because, say, Mercury's in retrograde, we don't have to just dig a hole in the sand and jump in it, okay, on those given times, you know. So in other words, I don't feel out of control because of these energies, but I definitely do feel impacted. I have my good days and bad days. I have my full moons and my new moons, and I have those days where, you know, someone pulled the plug on my energy circuit. We all go through this, and whether it's, you know, a feeling of depression or whether it's a feeling of celebration, or in most days it's somewhere in between, I think that's being impacted by all of these dynamical spinning orbs and spheres and et cetera that, that we're embedded in. So I guess the quick of that is, you know, you had started off at the top of the hour and at the bottom of the last, trying to, you know, maybe pick my brain a little bit about the Earth being maybe a conscious being and how do we relate to it, et cetera, and do we have an impact on matter and molecules? Yeah, the bottom line, in my opinion, is yes. We absolutely are this huge energy circuit, and we're processing, you know, that consciousness through us all the time. This is what our mind is about. And the Earth is, you might say, we're embedded in the Earth circuitry, and the Earth is embedded in the other planets, and especially the sun circuitry, the solar signs of the times, whether we're talking about sunspot cycles or we're talking about night and day cycles. I mean, just think for a moment, folks, that we tend to go to sleep when the sun goes down and we tend to wake up when the sun comes up. For Pete's sake, that's a mystery. What is turning off in our body chemistry that is allowing us to just go from a state of elation, you might say, to just deep sleep in a matter of a few minutes? That, to me, is where we need to start, you know, exploring more. I mean, that's why the realms of consciousness now are becoming, you know, mainstream topics in physics in some circles.
Well, we talk about these circuits and how they hook up between the Earth and the universe and between us and the Earth. That makes complete physical sense in the sense that, you know, we're generating energy, either consciously or unconsciously, and believe me, there are people that go through an entire life unconscious. Yes, they drive cars and hold jobs and have babies and all that, but they're unconscious. They really don't understand how, or that they are empowered, or that they are the masters of their own destinies, and that they should have 100% responsibility for that. And we'll cover that in our third hour a little more, but be that as it may, the sum of the intentions of the people that live, or the sentient beings that live on the Earth, are affecting the Earth, because this circuitry can have no choice but to react to the energy that's being put into it. So the ancients, specifically the Mayans, because that's really been explored deeply of late, talk about this moment of, well, let's just not call it destruction, let's call it Earth self-correction. So how, I mean, is this going to occur? Is the Earth going to self-correct? Is it going to have some spasm that centers in on areas that have been particularly negative?
Well, yeah, in my opinion, absolutely. And I have vacillated between absolutely nothing is going on to absolutely everything is coming on, to somewhere in between, but I am more and more convinced every single week now, especially as I look at what I see as the Earth changes. Now, I mean, you can talk about global warming, but that debate to me can swing on any given day between the human beings have minimal impact on the carbon imprint to they have maximal imprint. But the point is the Earth is changing. We're living on a living being that is conscious. In other words, it's self-regulating. It cycles. I mean, between night and day and everything in between, between the four seasons, this being that we're standing on the surface on is alive in any true sense of the Gaian idea of James Lovelock and company. I've come to realize that perhaps what's going on is a form of heliotropism, you know, like a plant that suddenly senses the sun and goes from like a sunflower with its head down to its head up and then pointing toward the face of the sun. I see 2012 mm-hmm. as this heliotropic event. And more so what we're facing is the alignment at the center of the Milky Way galaxy.
Right. As we pass through this galactic plane and line up with the rift in the Milky Way, there are obviously very powerful, although subtle, energies that are lining up with all the planets. And black holes, it is theorized, make up the center of every galaxy. So they've got enough energy to not only hold all those stars in its orbit, but also maybe they might even be the light engine that lights up all the stars. So don't think that it's not going to have any effect on little old Earth going around this main sequence sun on an outer arm of the Milky Way. It will.
And just think about this, too, folks, to even add on and pile on what Brooks is saying here, that, you know, the Earth sun relationship is 1 million times, you know, to one. In other words, the sun is 1 million times larger than the Earth. Think about this as a relationship between a gyroscope and several magnets that are lining up. And this magnetic gyroscope, this north-south bipolar planet that we're spinning on right now at about 1,000 miles an hour on its axis, you know, can you imagine if the center of the Milky Way galaxy aligns with our sun at a given point of time on this zodiacal 12-hour clock, if you will, every 26,000 years, give or take. There's some give there, but the point is that absolutely this is going to be a phenomenal change that's coming on. And it's all energetic. It's all understood at some level by the planet itself, I believe. And I think she, and I like the term she, Gaia, the great Mother Earth of the Native American and the shaman, I believe because she does not want to self-destruct. She does not want to give a breech birth. She wants a living, child to be born, a new human being, fully conscious of the relationship between what they do and think and feel and how they treat everything in terms of the natural resources. And so in my mind, of course, yes, everything means something, and we're going to become more and more awake as we enter into this 2012 event.
Well, before we get more into the signs of these times, let me go ahead and let the listeners know that we are now opening up the phone lines. So you can call toll-free anywhere in the U.S. and Canada at 888-228-4494. We also have a toll-free number just for Canada. It's 877-489-6350. And if you're anywhere else on Earth, you can reach us at 530-776-5154 or 5185 or 9916. That's 530-776-5154. Our Skype address is BBS Radio, and you can reach us at PalTalk through BBS Radio _com. And if you need to catch up on those numbers one more time, you can find them on the front page of X Squared Radio at x2-radio.com. So we're now opening the phone lines to the world for our guest, John J. Harper. Now, let's get a little bit more into the signs of these times, because there are a lot of, we talk about these, we bring news points at the beginning of each hour of this program, so that people can kind of know what cosmic things are going on out there, what space exploration we're doing out there. recently we've had a comet, Comet Holmes, out there, and it's done some pretty unexpected, remarkable things. Like just recently, the head of it just exploded, and it's now visible with the naked eye, and many people are saying this is the blue sun that was prophesied, and that we are getting very close to these end times events. So are there any signs that you uncovered in your research that you discussed in your book?
Well, yes, and not only have I found them in the research and talk about them in the book, I've experienced some of these firsthand, and maybe we can get into that in a moment. But
absolutely. Let's go.
Yeah, this idea of the kachina is what we're talking about, folks, within the Native American community especially, meaning light bringer. And there are some out there that I've been in contact with who talked about this impact of this light, this comet explosion, et cetera, opening our third eye. There's a physician with really good credentials, Rick Strassman, MD, a psychiatrist, who did work at the University of New Mexico School of Medicine over the last decade or so on DMT, on dimethyltryptamine. DMT, as we briefly mentioned an hour or so ago, is the chemical that's involved in hallucinogenic experiences of the shaman. The DMT is in ayahuasca and in some of the other hallucinogens of native plants. Point is, this is made every moment of every day, every minute in our brains, in our blood, and in our lungs. DMT, dimethyltryptamine, is the active ingredient that probably determines consciousness itself. Now, Dr. Rick Strassman said in a book titled DMT, the Spirit Molecule, that, this comes really active in about the 49th day, I believe, of the embryo, and starts the entire evolution of the brain and the central nervous system and the integration of the heart, et cetera, with all the organs. And I think for this evening's discussion, I think what the point is, that I think that this opening of the third eye is linked also to this kachina, this light bringer. It ties into Christ consciousness. It ties into the 2012 Mayan calendar. I think all of it is linked in some way to celestial events. And Rick Strassman recently said himself, more and more he's toying with the idea that the opening of the third eye is linked to the 2012 give or take event, and that it will have something to do with a galactic alignment or some solar system flare activity. And so, that's good enough for me. I mean, the guy's been looking at it for 10, 15 years, did not make these links until recently, and he says, aha, now I see how this ties together. That's how I came to my, insights and wrote my book as well, for the same reason that finally it fit together, and I just could not, write it and publish it. It would be irresponsible, I think.
Well, is there a way for the human being, without externally taking anything, to enhance the natural production of DMT in our own systems so that we can become more aware or have our third eye even more enhanced?
Well, yes, and I want to be clear. I'm one that's really, because of the nature of my work my entire adult life and the fact that I've been married for 38 years to a wonderful woman and have three adult children and eight grandchildren. I'm not one to sit and experiment with compounds. Number one, they're illegal. Number two, I have tremendous respect for the natural biochemistry of the human being. So I've always taken kind of a naturopathic or homeopathic approach to everything. And I know for a fact that fasting, for example, drinking lots of fresh water, for example, absolutely heightens your sensitivity, your electromagnetic field, I think, becomes more resonant with the earth. I think this is why we want to go into nature. This is why our recreation points, our national parks are important. I think they'll become more important. I think this is why we want to detoxify our bodies now in medical spa communities, for example. Why we want to, get back to the basics. Why Go Green technologies are coming about. This is all part of this huge desire to wake up and to become more self-aware aware of our relationships to the energy that we're embedded within, and that we can enhance the opening of our third eye through many natural ways. One of the ways that I've used, my friend Carlisle Burquist, who developed a product called Vantage Quest 6, which is at my website if you want to read about it. Burquist worked with Stan Gripner and Gene Houston, I believe, and others at Saybrook Institute in San Francisco while he was getting his doctorate. He's now a psychotherapist, family therapist in Kansas, but where he was born and raised, I understand. But anyway, Carlisle Burquist is his name, and his CD that is at my website talks about the natural resonant frequencies of the brain and how this it's a form of entrainment, in other words, a coupling, a phase relationship of our own natural state of minds and the larger fields of energy around us. And it's a little technical, but it's not, we're not talking about suggestion. We're not talking about, biliminal or, subliminal or anything, suggestion kind of stuff. These are not motivational tapes. You need to use these products wisely. I found this one to be very powerful. I can get myself into a state of mind that is very similar to what I had occur to me many years ago. So I think that, yes, the short answer is we can do all of the above and many more to enhance your third eye.
Now, these natural resonant frequencies, are these sounds? Are they light? Are they a combination of the two that you subject the body to so that it will enhance its production or its resonance?
Well, the natives have, sacred spaces and sacred rituals that no doubt are part of this phenomenon, you might call it, of opening the third eye for divination, for healing, for seeing the future of a particular group of people, if not the planet herself. They're done in places that are of high magnetic frequency. They're done around rock formations, around vortexes of water. They're done, in areas that are naturally abundant in green energy, like I was born and raised on the Olympic Peninsula in western Washington State. I know for a fact that has something to do with it. I remember, just being in states of mind that I never have experienced elsewhere. I'm sure people feel this way in other parts of the planet, too, and that's why we have all these sacred sites out here, whether that we're talking about Greece or whether we're talking about England and Ireland and Scotland, or we're talking, in Peru and Central America, Machu Picchu, and et cetera, the pyramids in Cairo. There's a reason for all these places, I'm saying, to be built where they're at. It has to do with this resonant frequency of 7.8 cycles per second, 7.8 hertz, give or take. I know there's folks like Greg Braden that talk about it rising and all that. It wouldn't matter to me where it goes. It would have to do with getting resonant with it still. You would still want to tune yourself, and the way you do that is through natural, pathic ways.
I like it. Do you think that the broadcasting of that frequency, either with a transducer or with human intention, that is to say, if you could take somebody that's dimensionally blind, that's never been exposed to any of this, and you put them in a sacred space with people who understand what that space is about, and those people begin resonating with that, do you think that the dimensionally blind person would entrain with that and have a similar experience that you had, not being classically trained or metaphysically trained, just having a lucid experience like you had? The conditions were just right for you.
I'm almost willing to bet my life on it, because if this doesn't happen, we're in worse trouble than we can even imagine.
Yeah.
Just think about what we're doing now when we're almost semi not blind. We're still in need of coming together in community and with this knowledge at the forefront of consciousness, as you're implying and stating forthrightly at times. And I think that's where we're headed, that I think the earth changes are probably going to become so at the forefront of the news, you might say, they're going to push us in certain ways to certain settings, and the energy will flow to certain areas. Certain people will become very sensitive and start establishing more and more so, new communities. And that's one of the things I've been exploring, as folks can see on my blog, on my website, that I just got back from a trip just a couple, 3 days ago, I guess it was. My wife Kai and I, we started out here in the Spokane, Washington area and went cross-country. I stopped at, with the Crow Indian Reservation, and I went up and visited with, General Custer's National Monument in the Bighorn Mountains of Montana, and then down into Wyoming and over through South Dakota and all of those folks in there, and so on and so forth, all the way down into Tennessee and Alabama. And so the point was to visit us and feel my way through these sacred sites.
Wow, that is an amazing catalog. I mean, that's, you go through those places and you know that this is God's country. This is one amazing planet when you travel around and see it.
Yeah, and you stand on those rocks and stare at these huge edifices that are natural stone formations or whatever. And, you know, we've got the carving Mount Rushmore, in South Dakota. But, you know, what created the first person to stand there and see the faces on that mountain? I mean, these are not mistakes. These are not coincidences. These formations of that magnitude, like the Egyptian pyramids are actually talking to us. Like Michelangelo said, he asked a marble piece of block of marble, he said, what do you want to be?
Haha, that's right. You just cut away the pieces that aren't that, and that's what's left. We might have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from? Nope, no caller. Okay. I'm totally blown away. I sometimes wonder what it must have been like for the first explorers to reach Egypt. And they came up over the rise there down to Cairo and saw the pyramid for the first time in their alabaster state with the crystal capstone on top. What in the world they must have thought. I know if I ever get a chance to go there, if it was in that state, all white limestone polished, shiny bright with a crystal capstone, I would have said, oh my, what planet have I just arrived at? These people are very, very advanced. I sailed here in a wooden ship. I'm quaking in my boots here. How important is the pyramid for the earth?
Well, I think that what we see encased in stone still today in the pyramids, the Great Sphinx and the, especially the three adjacent pyramids that are of so much discussion over the last few years about the Orion mystery, the fact that the belt stars in Orion are reflected on the ground and next to the Great Sphinx. And, there's folks like John Anthony West and Adrian Gilbert and Graham Hancock and all these great minds out there that are trying to solve this puzzle. And I think they have for the most part. And it has to do with alignments between the Earth energy and the solar energy and the galactic energy. So, and I think different civilizations at different times had a different take on this, also probably wanted to manifest different things at different times, just a different culture, and they decided this is what we're going to do with our intentions. Brooks, as you have alluded to before, I think this is what we're getting ready to do. We're going to get ready to come together in community again, in smaller groups perhaps. I see, you know, maybe a breakup of this great country into smaller native-type communities, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I don't think it would be either. I think if we break into smaller tribes, as long as we can learn to live like earthlings instead of constantly being asked to charge across the tundra at each other with battle axes, I think that's a good thing. But let me, I think the pyramid was built like 13,000 years ago and it aligned with Orion just as you alluded to, but now it's not in alignment with Orion the way it originally was. Are we fascinated with an edifice and we keep trying to kickstart it like an old broken down Harley and it's just not going to work on this side of the zodiac, or is it still energetic? Is it still a portal to some other world?
Well, I think that if we really look at this in the way that some of the scholars are looking at Orion, for example, you know, this has always been linked, Orion's always been linked in the metaphysics with the opening of the third eye. Basically, you know, it goes up from the horizon to an apex, to a top level point every 13,000 years, give or take, and then it drops down. And again, it's like an hourglass effect. You're talking about energy funneling up and then maybe funneling down. But again, the rotational aspects and all this would have to be mapped, I guess, on a computer to really get it visually. But I can tell you, and here's where I'll throw in a personal experience. A couple years ago or so, I had been doing a lot of talk shows and talking to a lot of different folks about these ideas, and I just became physically exhausted from the schedule that I had set for myself. And I told my wife, I said, we need to get away. I mean, just really away. I don't want to go to Hawaii. I don't want to go to Florida. I want to go somewhere just locally here in the Pacific Northwest. We ended up in this mining town of Republic, Washington. And one evening we were staying up there in a little motel room. And about 10 o'clock at night, I walked out the door telling the wife, I'm just going to get some fresh air. It was about, again, about like tonight here in the Northwest, about 25 degrees or colder. And I just walked straight out in the parking lot, looked straight up in the sky, and wham, I was looking at the three belt stars of Orion. Never in my wildest had I ever done that, had I never even thought about this connection at this level of just staring at those three belt stars in this cold mountain air would have an effect on me. I just, you know, the scientist in me just treats it as an object. Well, my third eye briefly opened. Nothing as phenomenal or as front page headline news as it had before, but I can tell you that I immediately felt a magnetic field effect from this visual encounter, and I felt heat into my hands. I walked straight back into my motel room. My wife, for some reason, had bumped her hand severely on a dresser, and I said, Connie, put your hand in my hands. And this happened just so quickly. It was all spontaneous and intuitive. And she looked at me and she said, what did you do? You immediately took the pain away. I said, I didn't do it. I've got a magnetic field effect going on. I explained briefly to her. She's very familiar with my research. She said, wow, what is that all about? And I said, I honestly don't know. So anyway, I just wanted to make this come home that there's something going on there. And I think that as more and more of us become awake and realize of the tremendous beautiful, magnificent energy that is the Earth, and the fact that we don't have to go around doing all these silly things again, like killing each other, etc., for pieces of real estate that from the space shuttle alone, from the International Space Station, we look down and see there are no boundaries. There's no lines on those maps down there. And what are we doing to ourselves, really? We're destroying the magnetic signature of the human being. We are eradicating ourselves just like a cancer, a selfish gene is doing in the body. We are destroying ourselves for what reason? Absolutely none. I mean, we are the most suicidal folks on the planet, bar none.
Yeah, and I look at that at war and how we call up tremendous amounts of research and tremendous amounts of money and resources. In fact, I don't think you can get a new energy device funded unless there's some kind of way it can be used as a weapon. There's just not significant amounts of money. I mean, there's a little trickle, a few million here and there, but nothing like the hundreds of billions of dollars that are spent developing weaponry.
Right.
There's
complete
switch, you know, in consciousness, in intent, in focus, that our governments need to take. And I think maybe the discovery of how to tap into that zero-point energy field that you were talking about, where cities, the need to live in a city or along a network of power lines goes away, and then people can have these connections just like you just talked about. I know when I walk out of the Hilton here in Odessa, and there's no Hilton in Odessa, but it's just a little 12-room hotel, there's not much light pollution here. And when you look up at Orion or look at the Pleiades, they're striking because there's no light pollution out here. There's a connection to Earth out here among these literally millions of acres of wheat field that is just breathtaking. It's unlike anything you'll experience anywhere. I totally relate to what you are talking about.
Yes, and as more and more of us can have these experiences, then it becomes real, and it's no longer just an academic discussion, right?
Right, right. That's interesting. Well, let's shift this to the next level here. Let me ask you a question, because you talk about it in your book, and we often talk about this on the BBS radio network, and I'm sure that they do on the Steel Eye radio network, which we're broadcasting on now. So let's try to maybe get to the physics of it if we can. Let me ask you this question. Does death exist? I mean, I know the physical body gets old and dies, but does the soul continue, and does it re-enter this physical existence over and over again?
Yes. We are energy beings, and no, there's no such thing as the death of energy. It can only be transformed, as we had stated earlier. So what are we doing then in a physical body each lifetime? Are we trying to reincarnate to the point where we don't have to come back? No, what we're trying to do is bring matter up to the level of spirit. So we're trying to take everything from this basic physics to the metaphysics realm, which is zero-point energy, in my opinion. So we begin as zero-point energy imprints or archetypes, you might say, basic, you know, prototypes of the human body that went through all the evolutionary cycles. And now we're kind of getting in the middle to upper realm of this archetype, this prototype. We're trying to you might say, manifest the Christ consciousness through us, as did Jesus, I believe. And there'll still be, in the short term, a need for the physical body to fall off like a snake shedding its skin. But at some point, we'll be able to regulate, self-regulate this process. We're not, in other words, trying to dematerialize the human body. We're trying to bring the molecules of matter up to the level of spirit. And that, in my opinion, is what the cosmic game's all about for the planet and for the solar system and beyond.
Very, very well said. One of my IMers wants me to mention the telephone numbers again, so here they are. U.S. and Canada toll-free, 888-228-4494. And in Canada, we have a special toll-free number, if you like, 877-489-6350. Anywhere else on the earth, many people have free long distance, or if you have a cell phone, or if you're in Australia, you can reach us at 530-776-5154 or 530-776-5185 or 530-776-9916. And you can also call us on Skype at BBS Radio or reach us through PalTalk at BBSRadio_com. So that's how you can reach us, get your questions in, and we'll bring them up. Now, I'm completely with you on this bringing matter up to the level of spirit. You know, it doesn't take much. Just turn around, look in the mirror, or put your hand on your own heart, if you will, and realize that there is a physical being here, the one made of calcium and iron and protein and water that's walking around and some state of physical being, fat or skinny, tall or short, blonde or redhead, it doesn't matter. You're a physical being. But the real you, the real driving force behind what makes up your thoughts and your desires and your love is something completely different. It's an energy being that's occupying your physical being. The earth is exactly like that. It has a physical being or a spiritual being inside a physical being. So there are two different phases of matter, spirit matter and physical matter, and they're at different levels of vibration. And they're occupying the same space at the same time in harmony. That's what makes your body up. So what Dr. Harper's talking about here, I think, is our consciousness, our intention, our energy on purpose, directed in a certain way, can raise the physical matter up to the level of spirit matter. And this is maybe the transition the Earth is trying to go through at this point of 2012, December 21st, 2012. It's kind of like birthday for the Earth and all other matter that will resonate with that higher dimension. Do I kind of have that right, Dr. Harper?
You certainly do. That's well put, no doubt about it. And the other thing that I'd like to share here, think about what happens in the paranormal realm. We talk about things like out-of-body experiences. Well, we want to get back in the body after those, don't we? We have near-death experiences. We want to come back alive in the body after them, don't we? So what's going on here is we're popping out of the shell once in a while, out of the cocoon, but we still want to come back and manifest the butterfly.
Ah, very well said. So the body, the physical body in this dimension, third dimension, where we are somewhat limited in our senses and receive information from the universe in a very limited way, where we really have to stretch our spirit selves out. This is the butterfly.
Yes, exactly.
We're
cocoon. The imprint, the archetype is in the DNA. The cosmic butterfly that we opened with my little poem is what we're trying to manifest, but that doesn't mean we're getting ready to fly away into the cosmos. We have got a job here to do. That is to clean up the mess that we created, or we're not going to be allowed to go play in the larger playground. And the other thing is that when you are telepathic, you don't need to go anywhere. This idea in physics of non-locality is the same idea of omnipresence. If you can open your mind wide enough, so to speak, you can be anywhere you want to be. But what you'll find is that you've spent millions of years to become a real human being, and you're not going to be willing to give that up lightly. All metaphors intended and puns intended.
So maybe this world, this planet, is of immense interest to other beings in the universe just because of that fact.
Yes, I think so. You know, that would not be something that I could speak to like others can. I'm still well-grounded in the basics of science and religion in its own way. But the shamans, I think, this idea of walking between worlds has captured me, obviously, and I made that the focus of my writings because I think they've got a real tangible way of keeping both feet on the ground while their mind opens up into the multidimensional realms.
Sure, sure. Well, do you have a clear concept of how we can tap into these past life experiences to sort of leap forward, or are we doomed to start from Earth to zero every single time we're born?
No, in fact, I think that we're all here at different phases of development. For example, when I was about 8 years old, I was sitting in my classroom at the base of Mount Rainier, Washington, in a little town called Pacific City. And I was in this elementary school, and I was sitting looking at the base of Mount Rainier with a beautiful puffy white cloud on the top of it that morning, and spontaneously I had the thought come to me, what am I doing here again? And I had never thought about this at all, you know, Brooks. I don't think I had a metaphysical thought up to that point. I was about 8 years old, and a voice, a real still voice, said to me, John, if not you, then someone else. Quote, unquote.
Oh, my goodness.
And what that meant to me, Brooks, was a flash of insight that I had died before, I had been reincarnated. I didn't have that word, but I had been born again, so to speak, into this lifetime. And what was imprinted on my mind was, by gosh, this is a sacred lifetime for you. You better do all you can and experience it and get it right if you can. You know, I didn't know what that meant, but I knew it was sacred. I knew it was spiritual. And I was not raised in a spiritual home at all. And I never shared this with anybody until later in life, along with some out-of-body experiences that I had as a child. But the point is that I think what we're here to do is to help each other get to this higher level, this spiritualization of matter, as a Catholic theologian D. Chardin put it in The Phenomenon of Man, you know, the new sphere, this idea of a cosmic mind connection between us and the planet and beyond, I think has resonance here too again. And some of those skills we're going to need are telepathy and also how to manage our states of energy. So anyway, it's coming back now. We're getting, I think, more and more of us are starting to get a more holistic perspective of what's going on. But this still is, you know, up for grabs. I mean, this is not going to be a walk in the park. There's some real heavy-duty lifting to do yet.
Wow, you opened up a lot of things about DNA, telepathy, and even entanglement of energy, because now you had lived your first 8 years near Mount Rainier, right?
Right.
Okay, so the food that you ate was pretty much grown locally and probably had absorbed the minerals from that very mountain.
Yeah, you know, as I have reflected on that more and more, I know that because we had an organic lifestyle then, and we didn't call it that, we called it poverty. You know, we raised our own food because we didn't have any other source, and I ate good food because I had to. There was no other option, and I, more or less, the older I get, the more I realize I was living an organic lifestyle because I was poor, and now that I'm more affluent, I have to go back and go back to poverty again.
Oh, that's interesting. But in owning, or at least absorbing or being built from the minerals from the deposits from that mountain, you became entangled with the minerals of that mountain. And so...
Absolutely. I became the energy signature. Yeah.
Yeah. So when the energy that was tied into that mountain, which may be connected to this Christ grid, because Rainier is certainly a powerful mountain and definitely a prominent mountain, maybe that connection that came to you was from the resonance or from the entanglement of that, of the very minerals that made up your body. And now your spirit that made up the little John was able to connect with that grid, and this voice opened up and you had a jump start. You did not have to reach the age of 40 or 50 or 60 and then have a voice come to you and say, John, you better get with it. You have something to do here. You discovered
well,
that.
Yeah, this.
That's amazing.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the important part of this is to say that probably because I and so many others are maybe just a little bit more, you might say, attuned to this energy because we've lived, maybe been blessed. Maybe this is by chance, but maybe we've been blessed to live closer to these sacred sites, and that when we come back into a body, we actually wait, in the sense that it's an energetic signature that we're waiting to be tuned to. And so we come back from, say, Cairo, Egypt, or Central America, to places like Mount Shasta or Mount Rainier or, you know, the Black Hills of South Dakota. Maybe it's because we are resonantly tuned to this higher order energy. We can only fit into a body that's physically co-located there.
Ah, co-location. Okay, we're going to get into that subject a lot more in our next hour. This is the end of the second hour of X Squared Radio, which is a three-hour program every Sunday night. So if you're tuning in for the first time, don't miss our final hour with Dr. John J. Harper and his book, Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. We'll be back after these messages. One more hour to go. Friends down at NRG Resources have introduced the new engine oil technology. TVT 24/7 is the future of lubrication. This is the industry's first environmentally friendly oil additive that not only increases fuel mileage, it reduces engine, gearbox, and transaxle wear to nothing. The other brands fail anti-friction testing in less than 10 minutes under standard testing conditions.
PBT 24-7 went more than 24 hours in the test and still did not fail. Get tomorrow's technology today by visiting the online store at X Squared Radio and pick up PBT 24-7 Engine Oil Energizer. There is some place you should visit before the end of the week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the six-part series is now available for pre-purchase at $5 off. This series will no doubt be airing on the History Channel or Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important video productions you will ever see. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today. If you have survived a disaster without food and clean water, then you need to visit NitroPack. They have been providing emergency preparedness supplies for more than 19 years. They have everything from 72-hour kits to a full year's supply for an entire family. We wanted you to have access to the best. That is why we searched for many months to find NitroPack. Click the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio and get prepared. The foundations of religion and science were utilized to write our first two volumes of the Ark of Millions of Years. The third volume, called Unlocking the Secret, is about to hit the presses. We want you to be aware of what is coming. You and I know that your potential is absolutely unlimited. We have crafted the final work of the trilogy, so you have the tools necessary to work the law of attraction. Find out what the ancient masters knew. Learn the methods necessary to affect the universe on purpose for the good of your life. Go to the online store at X Squared Radio and get your copy on order today. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. Welcome back to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. You're in hour three of the program. We're coming to you live from Eastern Washington State, the little town of Odessa. A giant telescope buried in the ice at the South Pole could one day create pictures of the Earth's core. According to a new calculation, the instrument called Ice Cube could produce a picture of the Earth's dense iron core silhouetted against the lighter rocky mantle. Currently under construction, Ice Cube is designed to detect subatomic particles called neutrinos, which are so evasive that they can slip quite easily through the body of the planet. A few neutrinos are not so lucky, however, and deep under the South Pole, Ice Cube is designed to spot them. The machine consists
of thousands of detectors and will eventually fill a cubic kilometer of ice. The detectors look downwards, watching for the distinctive flash of blue light that means a neutrino has come through most of the planet, only to get snagged in the Antarctic ice. The dense iron core in Earth's core could absorb more of these atmospheric neutrinos than the rock of the surrounding mantle. So with Earth illuminated from behind, Ice Cube should be able to see the core standing out as a dark shadow, just like a bone revealed by X-rays. Very interesting that they're building a telescope to look into the structure of the Earth. Speaking of the Earth and our bodies upon it, my guest is Dr. John J. Harper. His book is Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. His website, johnjharper.com. We want you to check it out. He's got a blog there as well, so there's a lot of fresh information there, a lot of good reading there, and we recommend it, and we recommend the book. It's a very easy read. And it pulls together about, 15 or 20 years of research that John has done. In our last hour, John was talking about his experience that he remembers at age 8, where living close to Mount Rainier, he had this epiphany, even as a youth, that, am I here again? So it's time to get started early this lifetime, and maybe with an additional lifetime of experience in the distant past, he had the ability to put the path or connect the dots, so to speak, and come up with this book, which is going to enlighten you as far as the physics and metaphysics of existence. And my question to open up this hour is, because we were talking about bilocating and maybe other worlds, is there a world that coexists in the void with this one here, or can we connect with it?
Yes, absolutely. I think more and more what we're seeing, Brooks, is this idea that I think Jesus probably was alluding to in what we know as the Lord's Prayer, you know, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. And then if we think about the mystical encounters folks have had with other beings like ourselves, in other words, relatives, family members, etc., I think what we need to start realizing is that our heavens are in the magnetosphere of this planet. In other words, we are part of a single organism called Gaia that is really one human being. In other words, our DNA is only one blueprint that is multiplied at present about 6 billion times. In other words, there's 20 amino acids, and these different configurations are what give us form, but there are no separate human beings per se. They all come from this one DNA molecule, and I believe that molecule was put together by the Earth for a specific reason, and that was to unite the inner and the outer realms. And so again, this idea, as above, so below, as within, so without, needs to be taken more seriously.
Well, I agree with that. As above, are we talking about another planet? Are we talking about another world, say in Sirius or in Orion?
Well, I think what we're doing is seeing that it's a multi-level, multi-dimensional reality, but I want to keep us grounded here, and then we can go on and talk about, do we have other lives in other realms? Are we part of another being such as the Earth, say in the Pleiades or in the Orion Belt that we mentioned briefly? Yes, absolutely, because all energy is connected. This is the idea again of non-local fields of energy. It touches on bilocation. It touches on the idea of interconnectivity and holographic configurations of energy. So again, if the entire universe, whatever it is this thing is in the form of a torus or a donut or a bagel, then we can see that every little minuscule part of energy gets processed through us as a hologram. Remember the definition, folks, of a hologram. Hollow from Greek meaning whole, gram meaning message. So we are whole messages of the universe all the time. And what it is, the holes in the part and the parts in the whole, that's what DNA means too. DNA is a holographic molecule because it can replicate itself. It is self-similar, or that's it repeats or reiterates itself billions of times to trillions of times in the human case to form the human body. But we don't need to even get that far. We need to realize that the Earth is this sacred being trying to generate one human being that is fully conscious. And I only have to assume that all the other star systems out there are doing the same. So I think it behooves us to humble ourselves at times and realize how sacred the human being is and the Earth herself. Realize we're not trying to go anywhere. I hear all these great ideas from folks, but I think it desacralizes, if you will, the human being. I think we need to realize how divine we are at times in these moments when we have this conscious epiphanies and these third eye-opening events. We need to realize how sacred we are now. We don't need to go anywhere, and I don't see us going anywhere in the long term.
Right, right. I've got that. So you think that the code of Christ consciousness is actually written in DNA?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I think that all of the information that's in, quote, the junk DNA, which is about 95-97% of what scientists say, you know, is something we don't need to replicate the human being with at the moment. I think that those codes, a lot of it is evolutionary information when, you know, the embryo goes through all the stages of, you know, the fish and, the vertebrates and et cetera, all the way to becoming a human embryo. So what we've got in that junk DNA is not only those cycles that we don't really need once we become born in the flesh, but what we have there is the codes for our future. We have the telepathic capabilities. We have the opening of the third eye, for example. We have self-healing, for example. So that this DNA, I believe, because it's vibrating at the frequency of light, microwave energy. You know, you can't see the DNA with a human eye, but yet the DNA creates the human eye. Now figure that one out, folks. In other words, DNA is projecting us from another realm right now.
Right, right. And I was noticing a textbook. It's called Biochemical Predestination, and it was actually a best-selling textbook. And it was written by a very famous biochemist, and I don't have his name in front of me right now because you just reminded me of him. But in his fame, you know, many students came to him and were taught by him until one day someone asked him a question, because his basis was, for his book, was that the folding and unfolding of proteins is where these random mistakes happen, where mutations happen, and where possibly evolution happens. Until one day, a student asked him a question that put him on a path of quandary, and that was, okay, we understand that proteins can fold and unfold, and in doing so, can pull off a piece here and there, and maybe not replicate itself perfectly, and yes, maybe random mutations do occur, but where did the first protein come from? And that set him to thinking. The first protein had to come from DNA. Which meant DNA was itself an engineered molecule. And that changed his mind. And the subsequent editions of his textbook took that into consideration. Now, you're talking about DNA resonating at the speed of light or bilocating at the speed of light. Does this mean that our real existence flashes back and forth between the physical and non-physical at the speed of light?
In my opinion, absolutely. I think we're as metaphysical as we are physical at each and every moment. You know, some of the folks that I interviewed for my book that had very profound near-death experiences, and again, this fellow that comes to mind, and I can give several examples, but one is Mellon Thomas Benedict. When Mr. Benedict died at age 32, I believe, from a cancer that was terminal over a period of about 18 months. He was with hospice, and things just didn't go right. He eventually, one morning at 4:30 a.m., awoke and told his hospice nurse that this was it. You know, the end was here. He was not going to live much longer. And shortly thereafter, he dropped into a coma. But the point is, he didn't die. And what he found himself doing was standing alongside of his body, watching all the colors of the rainbow download from his physical body into his new body that was forming right, as we say, before his third eye. And what he came to realize, Brooks, was that DNA did not die. The DNA is a liquid crystal that just crystallizes. It's embedded in the zero-point field right now, and it always has been and always will be. It can change configuration, as we know, through protein synthesis, et cetera, in the physical body, but the basic informational blueprint is there forever. And so he realized, and I used his quote earlier, where I said that this body that we're in right now comes from an unending stream of energy that goes beyond the Big Bang and beyond. It always has been, and it always will be. It's at the center of this torus within the fifth dimension, as we say. Light in physics is a fifth dimensional phenomenon, right? It goes beyond the third of form and fourth of time. And, you know, this is why we are immortal. This is why reincarnation can be something that is not considered an aberration or even, I mean, even I'm just talking about just the physics of it now, but I mean, you know, it has a logical structure to it because we understand that what we're trying to do again is create the spiritualization of matter, take zero-point field energy, run it through the algorithm of three- or four-dimensional energy, and back into fifth-dimensional pure light energy with all the life experiences now re-encoded in the DNA.
So this Christ consciousness encoded in the DNA really is the Alpha and Omega.
Wow, that's well said, yes. Absolutely. That's, I think, that's the full loop, you might say, of consciousness. You know, we go from a state of spiritual beingness to physical manifestation and back to spiritual beingness. But what we come back with each time is a great treasure chest of life experiences that we can share even while we're out of body. And I think, you know, the story of creation is that. It is a huge play, divine play of energy, as the mystics have referred to it. And it is. The only thing is, as a small child, I remember this story from my book, from my interviews of Dr. Mel Morse, the pediatrician in Seattle, who's well known for doing work with children who have died and had near-death experiences, then spontaneously revived. And one child said to Dr. Morse, who was telling Dr. Morse about, you know, that he had come out of his body and that he had met God. And Dr. Morse said, well, what did you talk to God about, basically? And the child in this innocence said, you know, I told him that, you know, I don't want to come back to the earth. I don't want to come back down here because it hurts. And this being of light said to the child, yes, it's very painful, and that's the way it works. So, you know, that was very simple, but powerful.
Well, we do have the pain, but we also have immense joy. And then we have these moments of enlightenment. I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from? Nope, I guess we don't have a caller. He's gone. There's immense joy, and there are these moments of enlightenment that come to us, and we realize that there's something out there, and for lack of a better word, I'm just going to use this word because it was in your book, and I kind of understand what it means, but I'm going to ask the question, what is Source?
Yes.
Maybe
that's right.
From Source? Are we a part of Source?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's only one being in the universe, and it's the one that we probably call God casually. I mean, I have no idea what that term God means, but I can tell you I have the experience of being alive and encountering a sense of a being that is so beyond my own that I would call that God. So, yeah, we all come from source, in my opinion.
So, being a part of source, it sort of makes us source as well. And if we realize that, then if we awaken to that fact, do we have what it takes? Do we have, let me put this a different way, do we have the resolution inside of us that we are, now that we are awake and realize that we are source, do we have the ability to align ourselves with the earth and maybe walk away from what has been a prophesied path of death and destruction to another way?
Well, what we're talking about, let me see if I can boil this down to its essence. You've done a really good setup there for me to talk about the idea that where we're headed is into this unified state of mind that we have alluded to as Christ consciousness. And what we want to do is intend now to come awake. And so what we've thought before was maybe an option for us, in other words, to seek the heavenly realms. I would say it's the only game in town, number one. Number two, absolutely, it's more life, it's more love, it's more life experience, it's more of everything. And the question is, are we going to say yes to it or no to it? I would say we need to say yes to it because it's the only way to get out of the trap of the lower physical levels that we find ourselves in now.
Right, okay. All right, well, let's develop that a little bit more. Ostensibly, what at least what's written in the record, is that Earth is about to go through its transition into its paradisaical glory. It's going to change dimensions. Part of it, at least, is going to leave here, this dimension, and go to another dimension, and some of us are going to go with it, and some of us are going to stay behind. Now, all kinds of traditions have their own idea what that is. They call it the rapture, they call it all kinds of different things, but every tradition, ancient or present, does seem to have this kind of mechanism, this kind of mechanic going on with the Earth itself. So, can we change the vibrational level of our own DNA individually or help another's DNA raise so that we can make this transition as well? That's the question, isn't it?
Yes, that's basically what we're going to experience in this dimensional shift, this next level of evolution where we begin to see multidimensionally through the third eye. We'll be able to then more intelligently work with energy. We'll know the diet we need to take, for example. We can see the darker energy realms that are not living food products that are keeping our vibration down. So there's going to be an educational component here that's going to be phenomenal, I believe, and that we're kind of stumbling in the dark now about it. But I see that will be something in the next few years will become to the forefront. It's happening all around us. We're seeing all these bits and pieces of the puzzle are coming into view because we're having shows like yours, Brooks, that are bringing these things to awareness at a greater intensity. And so there's going to be an intensity of consciousness developing about, well, then how do we work intelligently and consciously with intention with each other, and we'll form into groups that will have more you know, these types of ideas brought together and integrated for everyone, and we'll grow from it. We'll all bring something to the table to feast on. And so it's going to be a marvelous kind of thing. But the rapture, as we have heard it in the Christian fundamental circles, is true, in my opinion, but it's been too myopic. It's been too narrow-minded. I mean, it's not so much good and evil per se, because death seems to filter, you know, do that filtering for us. I mean, we've got folks on the planet now that seem to get joy in taking themselves and a lot of other folks out with them. So that in itself, I mean, is not a not going to be part of the equation, I don't think. What we need to do is be pro-life to the point where we're helping each other grow our energy signature, become more self-actualized, and actually foresee the future. And also where we're really going is we're going to drop fear off. when you know you can't die, there is no fear. And when there is no fear, there's better alignment of the energy fields in the body. So that's why healing and sacred ritual was there. It's to take the fear away from what you're experiencing and to go into the light, so to speak, more easily.
Ah, yeah, yeah. Well said. I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from.
My name is Mark. I'm calling from Albuquerque.
Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Agnew, Dr. Harper. I'm very interested in the conversation tonight. I was just getting into toroid math, trying to absorb it, and to hear you speak, I can imagine it within the universe even more so. So thank you so much for the work you're doing.
Oh, great.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
I have one question. I have a question. It's a theological question. I don't know if you want to touch on it or not, but from everything you're saying and what I'm understanding your understanding is, would you say that if there is such a thing as original sin, that the original sin is the very idea of separation from creation? And I'll take the answer off the air, and thanks so much for what you do.
Oh, thanks, Mark. All right, we'll answer it. Go ahead, John.
Well, I think that is a key insight, that we've never been separate from Source. We've never been separate from the solar system and the galaxy and the Earth and each other, and that if we understand that it's an energy dynamic that we're talking about, then we just want more and more and more of the good stuff, more light, you know, more energy. And when we push each other away, and when we think thoughts that are not integrated and think of the other as being part of yourself, then ultimately you get into the chaos stage that we're in now of evolution, where we're about ready to self-destruct. At the same time, we're ready to self-actualize. So it's, again, it's a horse race to the end. But I'm going to bet, I'm betting on it, so I tend to be an optimist. And so that would be my short answer to that. Yes, we are not separate.
Well, I kind of see the gist of his question. I mean, aren't we, after all, just fallen angels? Are we? Is the fact that we're in a lower energy state maybe what he's talking about, being separated from creation, and we're working our way back to that higher energy state where we're more toward the light, where we're more connected, we're more resonant? One of my friends, Michal Ledwith, says sin really comes from the Greek word, from the game of bows and arrows, which means to miss the mark, that you
That's
just
it.
Try again, that there is no black and white, there is no evil and good, it's just you missed, you know, try again, and maybe that helps eliminate the fear as well.
And not only that, you know, the idea of repentance, the idea of repent means to change your mind, be transformed in your mind. And the idea of religion, religio in Latin, means to unite or link back. So link back to what? To Source, of course. And so this whole religious lexicon has come about because of this gentleman's idea that we sense we're separate from God, so we need a priest or someone to, you know, a Christ. We need someone to come and say, you're not separate from God all the time, so that we can link back and repent, change our mind, change our consciousness, and come back full circle to the idea that we are one. So this idea of oneness is very powerful if you understand it and integrate it at these different levels.
Well, sure. And if we want to just tie all this back together in the last 20 minutes of our program, and this might help answer Mark's question as well. All of this is coming together, new energy awareness. If that takes hold, and right now I'm working on a biodiesel plant up here in Odessa, Washington, trying to help canola growers close the loop between themselves and their own diesel fuel, what eventually will happen is we will come off the grid and be able to live anywhere we want, and so cities will more or less be abandoned because people will get closer to living with the earth. And the idea of repenting just means to let go of the lower energies so that, you know, that fear disappears as well. So we're dropping fear off the grid, and we're dropping our energy off the grid, and we're becoming more in tune with the earth, with ourselves, and thus with source. So it's all working toward the same end, and it's physical. And the whole idea of singing hymns is to create a resonance, a sound. It doesn't matter what language it's in, your soul feels better when you're singing the song. This whole idea of reaching this state of vibration is inundated into religion. If you can ever just wake up and get out of the ritual of it and understand what it is you're trying to do. Am I getting close, John?
Oh, yes. Amen, brother. You're on a roll here. This is marvelous. This is in tune to the idea of the music of the spheres, and what we need to do is sing off the same sheet of music again. And so we can go on and on with these poetic metaphors, but the point is that they're true. And all we need to do is wake up and realize that everything we do has an impact not only on ourselves, but all the energy signatures around us. And you can personalize them like I do, because I've got 3 kids and 8 grandchildren, but those energy signatures got names, and they have they got pain receptors, and I mean, I got to be sensitive to their feelings more and more, and learn from them. They teach me all the time that, you know, that Dad and Papa, he can preach a good sermon, but he doesn't walk the talk all the time, because I get caught up in the stress, you know, the stress of the moment, and overreact, you know, blow a fuse now and then, and so they need
well,
to, you know.
I only do that when my computer doesn't behave or I'm trapped. Other than that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the technology can definitely ruin your day when it doesn't work properly. And but again, what is the media? The media is a communication device to feel reconnected to one another. And so the internet and email and so on and so forth is all about what we're, again, trying to allude to, this idea of oneness. We're all in this together. It's called the World Wide Web.
Yeah, and we also have 24-hour cable news now, too. So this fear cycle is resonated every 20 minutes or so on the networks, or on the cable networks anyway. So you get this negative thump over and over and over again, and it is constructively or destructively interfering with good and constructively interfering with fear, so that it you know, increases it. So my recommendation is, all of those listeners out there, is turn the news off. Just turn it off. You can turn it on for 10 minutes a day and get your weather and the gist of, you know, what's going on with Britney, or what person has disappeared lately in the elections. But then turn it off, so that it's not resonating over and over and over again. And let's try to thump or resonate out there something good over and over again, which is what's wonderful about the internet. It allows programs like this one and others to talk about enlightening subjects. And then tomorrow morning, Monday morning, people will come into the office and they'll click on this archive and they'll listen to it during their work day, and it may enlighten or change them or raise their frequency. That's what it is all about. So
yes, I think
let me ask you another question.
Yeah.
We got about 15 minutes left. Do you think it is DNA that is sort of dreaming us into existence?
I think that's one way of looking at it. The Aboriginal Australian idea of universal dream time and this relationship that we have with the landscape, and all animals and all plants and the water itself now, with those experiments going on, I believe we need to start realizing that we're in a dance, a kind of a mirror or an hourglass, if you will. This is the way I look at the cosmos. You know, you're starting with a full load of energy, let's say at the top level, and you're dropping it through. That's your life experience. At the middle, eventually you'll run out of energy. But do you die? No, you just change into the bottom of the loop and get recycled again and again and again. And so what are we doing with our energy today? That's going to be a question we ask each and every moment. You know, when you get really conscious, I think, I look at the news, for example. I'm sitting in here talking to you, Brooks, and our wonderful audience from a studio that I built. I've got plasma screens up in the wall. I've got the major news feeds talking about the news up right now and looking at some stories coming out of Great Britain about the fact that there's more, four times the number of natural disasters are occurring right now than they were in 1980. This article is going to be here probably, you know, within seconds or a minute or two, but I'm looking at it in the United Kingdom, but they're saying there was 120 natural disasters worldwide per year on average in 1980. There's now 500 per year. But the point is, it says this is no freak year. It follows a pattern of more frequent, more erratic, more unpredictable, and more extreme weather events that are affecting more people. Now, here's my point. If I'm aware of that, I don't feel panic, and I don't feel afraid of that. I say, what can I do in consciousness to change that little bit around? Well, I think what it would mean is that I prepare, for example, my family for these huge changes, and that's what I'm doing, for one thing. But I'm not afraid of it. I realize it's a natural cycle that I'm in. So I think, you know, we could turn the news off, and I try to do that too. We also can impact the news by sending a higher level frequency of information back into the news item itself. And I say, this is not a freak. This is a natural cycle. And I'm not afraid of you because I'm prepared for it, for example.
Very nice. I like what you said, though. I'm going to put it on my refrigerator door. What am I doing with my energy today? I like that.
Yeah, and what do I have in the refrigerator that's going to improve on the energy?
Well, it's interesting. So what is coming? What kind of earth changes do we face?
Well, again, I'm going to use this model real quick of this idea of a plant opening towards the sun, this heliotropic effect, where we have, I think the earth is getting ready to bloom. So my message is not doom and gloom. It's that we're getting ready to bloom. We're being groomed to bloom. And so the process, though, involves changing the center of gravity at the center of the earth. And this opening or turning towards the light, turning towards the sun or the sun behind the sun, as the ancients called the center of the Milky Way galaxy in 2012, I believe is absolutely going to manifest huge changes in the dynamics of the earth, the geometry. So if this geometric grid is trying to actually line up with a larger magnet, and I'm trying to pull all the ideas that we've had in the last couple hours together now, and I think this is what is happening. So we're going to have to anticipate more earthquakes around the Ring of Fire. We had two big ones a little while ago in Indonesia this afternoon. It was a 6.1 followed by a 6.7 a little shortly thereafter. Look to the Indian Ocean for these major events, but they will start rippling now around the Ring of Fire. We're going to see the volcanoes, which are just safety valves. These are steam valves that are letting off pressure around the Ring of Fire. So those are going to pop off more often. And so this is going to have a tremendous change on the climate. So I think at a minimum, and I see other events happening too on the east and west coast of the United States. But these things, again, are not doom and gloom prophecy. These are visions of mystics and shamans who can see the future because we know these are natural cycles, and we learn to anticipate when they're going to happen, when they're more likely to happen, and then we prepare our loved ones and our neighborhoods, our communities for them. We just have not had any credibility yet. We've been, you know, shunned and put in corners as nutcases, and there are a few of those, but if we realize that some of us can see the future and we can band together, compare notes, for example, and all then come up with, you might say, even a statistical averaging of what is it we see and smooth the rough edges out, I think we can start mapping this stuff and using this information, for one thing.
Oh, yeah. Well, it still maybe prompts one to quietly move away from the coast. I think we have a caller on the line. Caller, your first name and where you're calling from, please.
This is Anne again from California, and I got you right up after I spoke to you last time, so I've been listening to you. I was wondering if Dr. Harper has ever come across the idea that we may be farther ahead in our calendar than our calendar says. I noticed this year I'm one of the fortunate ones that lives in a very beautiful country, acreage, And we noticed in this area, and I spoke to my sister in England, and they've been seeing the same thing, that the Earth has been giving us a tremendous show this year in the autumn colors, more so than ever. Like she's giving us her very best, and I wonder if we're getting closer to what we call 2012 than we really know.
Maybe a slip in the calendar. Do you think that's possible, Dr. Harper?
Well, I think that what we're seeing is that we're becoming more aware of the energy dynamics that we're embedded in. And like Anne is saying here, that yes, we're absolutely seeing the changes of the seasons, and a lot of the prophecies about the end times and the signs of the times are absolutely manifesting right before and behind our third eye. And so all we need to do is be aware that we're in a natural cycle, and also realize that we need to prepare for even greater change as we approach 2012. And no doubt 2012 is not the end all. What it is the beginning. But the point is,
yeah,
I think more and more of us will be aware that, you know, we're entering into the age of Aquarius. And remember, the age of Aquarius is the water bearer sign. So we can see water events, undersea volcanic events. We're going to see, you know, tsunamis become more manifest worldwide, especially on the Ring of Fire. But the point is that we're in a natural cycle, and the Maya calendar seems to be extremely accurate, and it's tracking celestial events. So they're so accurate. Even now with our computers, we're seeing some of these, the Venus cycles, the eight-year cycles of Venus, for example, are tied into the Mayan calendar, and the Sirius star, the Dog star, on and so forth. But see, some of those are so fixed from our perspective on Earth that I would say the Maya calendar is very accurate.
Yeah. Have you, the prophets, in some of our ancient teachings, it says that children will lead us. Well, have you noticed how brilliant the kids are nowadays? So much more than they were in my youth. And think they have, some of them have four strands of DNA, and I think that has actually been proven in, the big hospital in L.A. They monitored the children that had been born with HIV, and they monitored them for 6 years and found that they eventually got completely over that by the end of the 6 years, and they weren't able to give disease to them, which means that they have more DNA than we do, and they can cope with that kind of stuff. But I'm working in a school, and I see these brilliant children. I mean, it's amazing what they know.
Well, I agree. Anyway. I have eight grandchildren, and I can tell you it seems like each one of them has brought not only a special gift, but I've got a 3-year-old right now. I've got a 17-year-old at one end of the spectrum, very bright young lady. And I've got a 3-year-old granddaughter that just blows my mind every couple of days with what she says.
I know.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I've got some great grands that age, and they come up with the stuff of it. It's just amazing. Anyway, thank you very much, and I've enjoyed your program. Yeah.
Oh, bless your heart, Ann. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I love you. Bye-bye.
We love you, too.
What a great loyal listener you have there, Brooks.
I know. she is a very special soul. And I was grateful in your book. You said something that kind of inspired me. It's how we push ourselves to complete things and overcome challenges. You said, the irony is you can't leave these projects alone, not because you have your ego wrapped up in them so much, although that is certainly true, but because you keep experiencing these blasted synchronicities, these meaningful coincidences that spur you forward in your darkest hours. That's another thing I'm going to put on my refrigerator, too. That's just how it goes, these projects that you work on. You think, I'm really going to give up on this. And then another synchronicity happens, or another coincidence happens, and another door opens, and you keep going and keep going. I guess in the last 6 or 7 minutes of this program, the message that we want to get out there is don't despair, because I think, as you said, Terrence McKenna said, prepare yourself to die, if for no other reason than pure amazement. So we don't want you to despair. We don't want you to have doom and gloom. We want you to realize that, yes, there isn't much time, so don't procrastinate. Get about your fantastic work as quickly as you can and pour yourself into it. Is that the message that you would give?
Yes, absolutely, and with that level of passion, too, that, you know, what we need to do is pull together, not push each other apart anymore. So when you see someone fall, reach out and grab them before they hit the ground and say, come on, my friend, come along. We're going to have a great day today. We need to do this more and more and help each other along. I just marvel sometimes when I go into the coffee shops, you know, and see what's going on at the cafe level, as I say. There's some wonderful conversations going on in those, Brooks, you know. I mean, you know, Starbucks thinks it's all about the bean and all that. I think it's all about the sea, about consciousness. And you know, people coming together and sharing, and they're sitting there having conversations, and their cell phones are ringing, and their laptops are humming, and my God, look at all the good stuff, all the good, juicy information that's being shared. And, I see that happening more and more, and, I think that it's leading to this telepathic opening of the third eye.
I think you're absolutely right. I think you've been right on the mark the whole time. In fact, I'm so moved by this final hour. I think I'm going to go ahead and podcast this hour. So we'll put it on the website for free in our free listening zone. So those people who you want to send there, they can get this final hour for free, and we'll just podcast it out there for another 12 million listeners. And go out there on iTunes and whatever. It's just very rarely do we have an hour that just clicks like this and where the guest just hits the nail directly on the head, and you've done it. So this one will go out there. We'll put it on behind our little podcast headphones at x2-radio.com, and you can send your friends there, and they can listen to this hour for free. So what is coming up now for Dr. John J. Harper? Where are you going now? What events have you got coming up?
Well, what I have, my publisher and agent have got me booked on talk shows through early 2008, so I'm going to focus on those and then continue, you know, updating my blog site, trying to put more information on johnjharper.com that inspires me, and hopefully some of our listeners can swing by there. But, you know, I don't want to close this wonderful hour either without you read an opening poem that I created many years ago with a minister friend of mine here in Spokane, Washington. But I'd like to, if I could, Brooks, close with William Wordsworth's poem, Intimations of Immortality.
Oh,
our birth is but a sleep and a forgetting. The soul that rises with us, our life star, hath had elsewhere its setting and cometh from afar, not in entire forgetfulness, and not in utter nakedness, but trailing clouds of glory do we come from God, who is our home.
Very sweet. Not unlike verse 2 of the song, O My Father. Open up your hymnal sometime and read verse 2 of that. Be very similar words. Well spoken, well read. Is there any final thing you'd like to take the last couple minutes of our program and have us know? Maybe something you left out of the book in Epiphany since you wrote it that has kept you going.
I think the biggest thing for me that's inspiring me now is to see that we can make a difference in the Middle East. I think that if more and more of us become aware that we are the agents of change that we're seeking, we need to get a hold of our political leadership and tell them we will not tolerate war anymore. There must be diplomatic solutions to these problems. It is not acceptable to kill in the name of our country. We are too great, and we have a marvelous future ahead of us.
Couldn't have said it any better. I think we are at the end of the age of war. Let's just walk away. There's another
time
way
to yeah, it's time to take the tanks and beat them into plowshares, as we might say.
Yeah, new fish habitats at the bottom of the sea.
Yes.
All right, my friend. It has been a marvelous pleasure having you on X Squared Radio. I will have the podcast up by in the morning, and I'll send you the link via your email or your publicist's email, and we'll get that up. Is there any question you have for me? I know that's kind of a rare tradition we have here at X Squared Radio, but we let you ask a question. What have you got?
I'd like sometime for you to talk more about your biodiesel projects and related science activity. I'm fascinated about this new technologies.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we just put up Joe LaStella's second hour at the podcast at X Squared Radio. It talks about the biodiesel plant we're building here in Odessa, his algae to oil technology. In fact, we are building a 100-acre algae facility just outside of St. Louis, Missouri, as we speak. And when we get it done, we will now have a new feedstock source for oil into the biodiesel process. And literally, we did the calculations, 3% of the current agricultural land, and we're talking the junk land, not the land you want to grow stuff on. There's just a flat land that you're not using. 3% is all we need to make our country oil independent with respect to fuels for diesel engines, which, if you know, that's the way your groceries move in this country, is with diesel fuel. So
then I'll add on a quick comment. Why don't you invite me to one of these facilities sometime? Let's do a show together and talk about these technologies and their application of them and how we can get our communities to open up and really, you know, lock into this level of consciousness.
Oh, absolutely. Come down to the facility in Odessa. We're about an hour and a half east of you, out on Highway 28. Just come on out. We have a 28,000-square-foot facility we're finishing up. Well, actually, we're starting into the wiring and insulation right now, but the equipment is being placed as we speak. Come on out. Have a look and take some
pictures. I would love to. Absolutely.
You bet. Just get a hold of me at my email, or have your publicist get a hold of me, and we'll set up a tour. No problem.
We'll do it. And maybe you'd invite us. We'll bring a camera crew and do it right.
Very good. No problem. It'll be up and running by March 1st. So
wonderful. We'll
very good.
Continue with this. Yes, sir.
Okay. Have a great week.
You too now. And good night, everyone. I enjoyed
this
program very much.
Thank you and good night. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening.
Thank you very much.
Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.